The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
You're welcome back. Kira Doherty sitting in for Pat Kenny today, and delighted to be joined by my old friend Anna Daly, who is sitting in the hot seat for Lunchtime Live today. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Kira. Playing a blinder.
Thanks. Looking forward to hearing your own show today. What's on the agenda?
Yeah, we've lots coming up. But one of the big talking points today, Kira, as you well know, is the primary school curriculum changing early next year. And we're wondering how the listeners feel. Sex education is one of the elements that will change, and from third class rather than sixth class, those elements will be introduced. So we would love to hear from our listeners, 087 1400 106, what their thoughts are.
It's always controversial, isn't it? That people are always a little uncomfortable. So I presume you're going to get a lot of texts and calls about that.
Yeah, but it's a body of work that's been in progress for about 8 years. So hopefully they've done all the right work on it.
All right. That's Lunchtime Live with Anna Daly coming up at 12 o'clock. Now joining me in studio is Julie Galbraith, Chair of the Employment Law Association of Ireland. And she's here to talk to us about our work contracts, what they should look like and what an employer needs to include on the contract. Julie, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks so much, Kira. It's great to be here.
Now, a contract, a work contract. Let's just start with the very basics here, Julie. For every job that you're employed for, should there be a contract?
The short answer is yes. So when Pat and I have been on here in previous months, we often pick a really bespoke area of employment law and talk about this. And for this month, I thought we really should go back to the basics. We really should be looking at every single employee should have a contract of employment. It doesn't need to be 10 or 12 pages. It might just be two or three pages. But this is a document that everyone gets and they sign it and they hand it back. So what I want to talk a little bit about today is what the employee needs to think about in that contract and what an employer needs to think about in that contract.
Okay, so let's start off with the employee, because as you say, I think when most people get their contract, they check two things. What's the salary and what's my holiday entitlement?
Right.
And after that, not much more.
Yeah. And what I would say to employees is this is the most important document you will have in your contract. So in your whole engagement, and hopefully you'll be with this employer for 10, 15, 20 years. And often problems only arise, and this is the same for the employer, when there is a problem. So when there's an issue down the line, I will always say to my clients, go back to the contract. And that has all the key information. So some of the really important things to bear in mind now for both parties is really the full names of both the employer and the employee. So for the employee, are you working with a group of companies? Is the correct company on your contract? Has someone thrown out a template that has a different entity? What's the address and what is your place of work? And again, place of work was always overlooked, but it has become very popular now as employees are working from home. So if an employee wants to work from home, they need to be very careful that that is in the contract. So we're well beyond COVID. We're well beyond hybrid working. If there is a change to how that work will be, it needs to be in the contract. So if it says your place of work is News Talk, Macroney House, but you want to work from home, you need that to be in the contract, or you need an email or something else that goes along with it.
And what happens if they put in that line, yes, you're entitled to work from home, but the company, subject to changes, are allowed to alter that?
And that's what the line will be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think I've read those contracts before, and certainly as an employee, or that's what I would be putting in. Can you ask for that to be removed?
You can, but it's very unlikely that it will be removed. And again, if we think back to the time that this has been negotiated, this is the time when the employee is trying to be their most fulsome self. They're trying to make sure that they come across really well, really collaborative. They don't want to be causing problems at the outset. But this is the time to put on, as we'd say, your big girl pants and have your really authoritative voice and say, I fully appreciate that. I have been told I can work from home and I need that reflected in the contract. There will be all those provisos. And if we get on to benefits and pensions entitlements and sick pay and VHI, there will always be a catch-all that says the company reserves the right to amend or terminate any benefits at any point. But the key piece is, an employer cannot simply remove a key contractual term or benefit. So that still must be consulted with. They still must go through a consultation. They must put in a comparable term or comparable benefit as they are doing that. So there's lots of nuances in that, but also they absolutely can.
But I think you're right there. I think there's a real nervousness, isn't there? I mean, okay, if you have been headhunted and you're going into a big job in a company with a massive wage attached to it, and you can probably negotiate pretty toughly, and you might even be able to contact somebody like you, Julie, and ask you to look over their contract. But if you're an ordinary person taking an ordinary job, you're probably a bit reluctant to do that, but you should.
You should. And what I would say is read it. Like, so many people don't read it. And contracts can be 10 pages long. It is likely that the most important information is in the first 3 pages. So read the first 3 pages very well, then skip along till the end, and that's where your notice will be. So your notice is always at the end of the contract, and you need to be very careful both on your date of commencement and your notice period. So the commencement date, that's your start date. Companies often make mistakes on start dates. If you imagine HR have lots of different hiring people, things are coming in and out, make sure your start date is accurate, because that affects your benefits. So you won't get your VHI unless your start date is accurate. If there's a probationary period, that will run for 6 months. If your start date isn't accurate, your probation runs longer. That can have a knock-on impact if you're going for a mortgage, because you need to be in a permanent role. It won't be accepted if you're still in probation. And then years down the line, if for any reason you are made redundant, your statutory redundancy commencement date will be based on the commencement date in your contract. So have a good look at your commencement date. Then on notice, it's really important to look at your notice. Employees are often surprised when down the line they have a 2 or 3 month notice period, and they say, God, I thought I only had a few weeks. No, you will be required by law to serve your notice. You need a very easygoing employer to let you out earlier than the notice that is there. And the same for employers. So when employees resign, if the employer has simply put in the statutory notice period for an employee, that is only ever 1 week by statute. So the employer has to give more notice, but it's only ever 1 week. So I would have had a lot of employers come to me and say, you know, this is a real problem for me now because I need the person to stay longer. I haven't got the role lined up for somebody else. So the employer as well needs to be really careful, think it through. How long will I need this person for at the end? If you only need them for a month, don't put in 3 months, because then again, you're going to have to pay them for the 3 months if it's only a month. So there's lots of nuances there to be aware of. The other thing that's worth looking into at the outset is the hours of work. So there'll always be an hours of work clause that will have start times, finish times, and the total hours in the week. Have a look. Are your breaks paid? Is your lunch paid? It often won't be. But those are the points that employees would say, well, look, I factored in this role on the basis that I was getting paid over these hours. Is it an overall salary? Is it hourly paid? Because all of these things will have nuances then based on how the employment works out on a day-to-day basis.
If your terms and conditions change throughout the course of your employment, and often they do, where they say, you know what, we'd actually prefer you to start at 8 instead of 10. I actually need you to work Saturdays, whereas beforehand I thought I needed you to work Sundays. Those things sort of happen. First of all, are they allowed to do that if it's not in the contract? And if you do it, right, and you agree, you're one of those employees that says yes to this, does that then become an implied term of the contract?
It does, yes. Often if someone gets a promotion, or if there are changes in the business, if there's a change to a bonus scheme or a pension scheme, the employee will be issued with a new contract of employment, or a side letter to their contract of employment is more common. Those terms do become the contract, but equally, as you say, if they don't get a formal side letter but they are working to the terms, that's also implied as a contract. What I will often hear employees say is, oh, well, I never signed the contract, so they can't hold me to that. But they absolutely can. So what the law says is that the employer must sign the contract. If an employee does not sign, never returns it, but works to it, so is receiving the benefit, is taking their salary, and that is all coming through, that is deemed to be the contract that is in place. So it will be that written document that is in place.
Okay, we have a text in here. Working many years in a company where commission is paid, whether you're in the office or when a sale goes through, i.e. weekends or holidays, etc. All of a sudden, we're denied the commission if we're out sick. Is this legal?
There's lots of nuances to that. So during sick leave, someone should not be deemed to be working. So an employer has to make sure that they're not working during that. The commission has loads of different variables. So if the commission is payable based on a sale or a product or someone actually doing work, I can see why an employer would be afraid to pay commission if someone is on sick leave. However, if the commission is based on ongoing sales, things that are continuing all the time, that probably should be paid while someone is on sick leave. So short answer is it depends on how the commission is earned by the employee.
Go back and look at your contract.
Correct.
Julie Galbraith, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us
here
this morning. Well, that's it from us. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. Big thanks to the team this morning. Editor Emer Bradley, Senior Producer Claire Darmody, Researcher Cian Burns, Leah Doherty and Joe Duffy, Broadcast Assistant Anne-Marie Kane and Cormac McDonough, who was so helpful on sound. And thanks for your company.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.